For over 10 years, we've been bringing you killer metal music and frank discussions about heavy metal. Wait, who the hell is Frank? You are tuned into MSR Cast, brought to you by Mainstream Resistance. Here are your hosts, Kerry the Metal Geek and Sean the Metal Pigeon. Keep it metal.
This is Bruce Corbett of Warbeast, and you are listening to MSR Cast. Crank it up!
Welcome, my friend, to episode number 216 of MSRcast, your heavy metal podcast, or one of the ones that should be in your listening rotation. I am one of your hosts. I am Carrie the Metal Geek, along with
Sean the Metal Pigeon.
So, somber intro to the show. We started everything off with a War Beast song to pay tribute to a fallen metal hero, Bruce Corbett, from War Beast and Rigor Mortis, and a phenomenal Texas vocalist has been around for a long time.
Yeah.
And he's been fighting, cancer for a long time.
Yeah.
I was friends with him on Facebook and just watching some of his struggle and how a fucking horrible disease like that just takes somebody's life over so badly.
Yeah.
But I didn't know him quite as well as I would have liked to, since we live so far away. But I know a lot of my friends were really good friends with him, and a lot of people in the music scene were really good friends with the dude. And he was a generally awesome, just friendly guy.
Yeah.
I only got to physically meet him a few times. Did a couple of interviews, but you know, he reached out to me after my first interview I did with him. He friended me on Facebook. He found me on Xbox Live.
Oh, wow.
And became one of my friends on Xbox Live. So we would play video games together every once in a while. He was just a really cool guy. He was a huge Batman fan, if you didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
Huge. Yeah. He had, in his wedding, he had a guy dressed up as Batman.
Doing the officiating?
Yes, I believe so. There's video and pictures of it cool. out there.
Yeah.
What were you going to say? I'm sorry.
I mean, because he lived in Dallas pretty much the entire time, right?
Yes, that's correct.
I mean, and most of their musicians, they know people here in Houston. The scene's kind of Texas metal scene, kind of statewide. Like people know each other across the state.
Yep.
A lot of guys in Houston know people in San Antonio, so he was known in Houston. You know, like War Beast and Rigor Mortis. Rigor Mortis is kind of like they had that classic debut. And
we're gonna be playing something from that album later.
I mean, that is one of the best thrash metal albums of that era.
Oh yeah, for sure.
War Beast was not as known, I feel like, and honestly, with me, I wasn't as familiar. I've heard War Beast before, but I wasn't as familiar with them. I mean, that Rigor Mortis album, I had it dubbed for me on a cassette by a kid I knew in middle school. Like, he just made me a ton of, like, you know, copies of stuff that he had, and that was one of the things he had, and I always thought that was a cool record. So yeah, it was a stunner to hear about that news. I mean, it just sucks.
It really does. Yeah. But he was very open and to the public on his social media, his Facebook page, about fighting this fucking horrible disease. And
yeah,
he, right before his passing, he had checked into hospice and they checked him out.
Oh, see, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Mm. And right after, I mean, it was within a couple of weeks that he was gone from that.
Because whenever people talk about these things, they always talk about how they're fighting it. And so when you're not like paying attention to their, you know, everyday things, you're just like, okay, they're fighting it and good. And then this news comes and it just hits you and you're just like, oh, you know, like today, former, and it's a Houston Texans GM, his wife passed away.
Oh, yeah, I saw
cancer.
That.
And that was like one of those things where we all just kind of assumed, like, hey, she's, you know, he's got all the financial resources in the world, best doctors in the world.
That doesn't help it.
And it's just, yeah. It just,
I just heard today there's working on some a cure that could possibly work. I'm like, fucking throw money at it.
Try
do it,
man. Yeah.
So the song we picked was called Nightmares in the Sky from the album Destroy. Trying to remember the year that came out. That was 2013.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The last EP that War Beast put out was in 2017. But yeah, the first album from Rigor Mortis was 1988.
Yeah.
And the last one they put out was 2014. So between that first album and their second album, there was that time period.
Yeah.
He was so happy that he got to go back and do a fucking Rigor Mortis album.
I never listened to that second one. I need to go listen to it.
Yeah. It's like, because Mike Scacia, had passed away too, who was the original guitar player.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
He was also in Ministry and Revolting Cox and a bunch of those, you know, Alan Jurgensen projects.
Right. Yeah.
He passed away. I think he died on stage, if I'm not mistaken. He like passed out on stage and didn't survive.
Huh.
Yeah.
I can't believe a story like that would slip my mind. Maybe we did talk about it or something on the show. Maybe, was I even on the show back then? I don't remember. Time is a mystery to me now.
I know, right? I'm trying to pull up that. So rigor mortis, yeah.
I think that one of the things I remember about rigor mortis was just that it was like they had that perfect mix of being like very wild sounding but still technically proficient. And I'd never like my problem with like a band like Exodus, which I still am not that much a big a fan of Exodus. Their newer albums, yes, but their 80s stuff.
Oh, really?
It's like.
Like what?
It's a little too sloppy at times for me.
That's what I liked about it.
And the thing I loved about, like, the thing I really liked about that rigor mortis album, and I played that, I wore that cassette out.
Yeah.
Was that it had that right mix of, like, swap, like, kind of looseness and then, like, precision tightness that you wanted in thrash metal.
I liked the late 80s, early, first couple years of the 90s thrash metal because bands are really trying different shit.
Yeah.
There's a lot of bands out there that are like, you know what? We're not making any money right now. People are not caring about fucking thrash metal.
Yeah.
So let's just do what we can and see what happens. I mean, a lot of bands are Exodus did that. You know, Death Angel was doing that.
Yeah.
Wrathchild America, which is one of my favorite bands from that era. We need to do an episode like that. And I've talked to Larry Roberts from November's Doom about that. He's a big fan of that era too. So we need to get him on and maybe pull some rarities out that people might not know as well.
I mean, one of my most disappointing album purchases was Impact is Imminent from Exodus.
Oh, no. It's a great album. I had that cassette and listened to it all the time.
I had the cassette, and I think I just gave it to someone. I was just like so bummed out.
Really, I was really into that style there.
Yeah.
Still am, actually.
Maybe I'll go back and revisit Impact and see how it holds up.
Yeah,
but I was listening to that rigor mortis album today. I was just remembering. I was like, "Wow, I listened to this thing to death back in the day." So yeah, yep.
We're gonna be playing something off that album later on. So, but what are we playing next? There's a lot of new stuff in this episode because within this past month, I've discovered three or four bands that have become darlings to me that I cannot stop listening to, and we're going to be playing them in this episode.
I mean, it's the end of January. It's been a minute since our year-end episode.
Yep. We've given a little bit of time. I know you took a little time off from listening to newer albums.
Yeah, so here's the thing with release schedules. A lot of labels do like to throw things out in January, but generally speaking, there is a bit of a lull after Christmas and like the first 2 weeks of the new year. And so I think we all just kind of collectively decided without talking about it, just take a break. And I gave myself a break from the blog, too. And I recently updated this week some stuff that Justin had suggested, like Harakiri for the Sky. And I was listening to stuff that Dave had suggested on his top 10 list. And I was just going through things and listening to stuff I had missed last year. So I posted that up at the metalpigeon.com. And there's like albums I enjoy from that I've become the past couple of weeks. But I didn't really get around to listening to new stuff until like a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago. And I really started to realize like, okay, actually this year is starting to pick up faster than I thought. And there's a ton of stuff in January. Like right now there's like, I mean, our show is stacked with it, but they're we're not even covering all of it.
No.
And now in February is going to be a big month too, because we got like Aventasia in the middle of the month.
Yep, and they've already released a couple songs from that album.
Yeah, and there's a couple other big albums coming out, too. I had a list on my notes for my site. But yeah, so now it's time. We're trying to play catch-up here, so.
So let's talk about the new Nightflight, the new Soilwork.
Yeah.
So Soilwork just put this album out, came out early January, right?
Yeah.
Called Verkalykaton. Sure.
Yeah, sure.
I've always been a fan of story work. Sometimes they can get a little repetitive, but some of the early stuff was really, really good. And this new album, if you didn't tell somebody that it wasn't a Night Flight Orchestra album, it's very close. I mean, there's elements of that, but then there's also elements of soul work where some of the blast beats and some of the heavier vocal style that he does, but you can definitely hear the something was lit under his ass when he started doing Night Flight. It like felt like it rekindled his love of music in general.
I think so too, yeah. I mean, the heavy parts in this album are really good. But the things I'm really here for are the Night Flight influence stuff, because I love that band so much.
That 70s AOR stuff.
Yeah, and it's so interesting to hear it merged with Melodeath. And,
yeah. And Dirk Van, Verburen?
Uh-huh.
The drummer, I'm sorry?
Yeah.
I can't think of his name now. Go ahead.
Yeah.
I'm gonna look this up.
I think that he found like his calling with like Night Flight in terms of just because I like Natural Born Chaos and I liked Figure Number Five, but when you go back and you listen to those records, you go, okay, this is clearly this band that was a totally different, you know, era of that band, and they kind of transitioned into some weird stuff, and I didn't really like their albums past that.
So I was thinking of Dirk Verburen, but he's no longer in Soilwork because I forgot about that. He's now in Megadeth.
Oh, okay.
But they have a new drummer now. He was in. He's been in a bunch of different stuff. He did stuff with Devin Townsend. That's where I know him from. Soilwork and Oral Dane, a bunch of different bands. Terracon.
I checked out of Soilwork after Figure Number Five. I remember listening to stuff after that and just kind of going like, like nothing here is grabbing me, and I would just kind of
Stabbing the Drama was still a good album. I remember that album.
I think that was one of the ones I didn't like, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I need to go back and listen to it, but they were one of those bands that just my interest sort of waned after a while. I think that this Night Flight having kind of Night Flight triggered my interest in him as a musician. And I was like, okay, so I'll give the new Soilwork a shot. And I honestly kind of am into it, and I'm kind of back in this band's kind of what they do. It's like a weird mix of like Melodeath and weird progressive stuff with like some hard rock bits thrown in there. It's just a weird mix. They're doing something from that scene, that Swedish scene, that's just like.
No other band
is doing. Yeah, Dark Tranquillity doesn't sound like them, and obviously In Flames doesn't sound like them. So yeah,
In Flames doesn't even sound like In Flames anymore. Yeah. So
yeah,
not going there right now.
Yeah, March. So, we'll talk about that in March.
No, we won't.
we'll rip that album apart in March.
So let's get into Soilwork. Let me hear you pronounce the song title.
Stalfagel. I mean, I'm pretty sure that's wrong because those little O's above the A's there. I don't know how to pronounce Stalfagel. Thanks, Soilwork. Thanks for making it difficult.
I'm sure that's what they were aiming for, to make it difficult for you.
Yeah.
If they did, they succeeded.
Yeah.
So, this is off the brand new album, Verkligheten. Yeah, whatever. Thanks, Soilwork.
That is making it difficult for non-Swedish fans.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It is.
So check out brand new Soilwork and we'll be right back. We'll be right back.
back, MSRcast 216?
Yeah, you say that with a question mark.
I can't remember these numbers anymore.
Yes.
Okay, so that was an interesting band for me because I just discovered them this week.
I discovered them last week.
A band called Hellevorn, album called... Okay, I'm going
to... You know what? Hellevorn are hella good.
Hellevorn, album is called Alma Mater.
Alma Mater, yeah.
That was a Sail to Sanity. I am really into these guys.
Me too.
I love this kind of gothic metal, Moonspell meets Swallow the Sun approach they got going on.
With doom metal influences. And
yeah. I mean, I'm all in on this album. I've been listening to it every day for the past couple of days.
Me too. It's very, the guitar tone, it's very bright.
Yeah.
When we were working on the songs that we're going to pick for the episode, I was so happy that you already picked this band because I was about to put it on here.
Well, I was going through my emails and I saw one of the promo emails had for fans of Swallow the Sun, and I was like, click.
You had me at Swallow.
I think it was John Asher or something. Shout out to John Asher. Good email. Subject line. That'll get my interest every time.
Right.
So it was really awesome, and this album is surprising me in the sense that it's
available now. It came out January 23rd on Bad Moon Man Music. Check them out. They're on Bandcamp and all that kind of stuff. They have video stuff on YouTube. We just watched a little bit.
Yeah,
really cool lyric video. I think it was more animation style. I liked it.
I think that the gothic metal style of this band is this kind of deliberate throwback to not only you get a little bit of that Peaceville sound in there, just a little bit,
yeah,
but I really think the Moonspell influence is pronounced. And I was, as we were talking about in the year end episode, Dave and I, we've both kind of gotten back into Moonspell this past year ever since we saw them live. So I've been on a big Moonspell kick over the past couple months, and this is falling right in line with that kind of obsession. So we were talking about the guitar tone earlier. I was like, oh, that's Moonspell.
It's they're big dramatic power chords. Mm-hmm. And but everything has this sense of a melody into it, and they get slow and doomy at points, and mm-hmm. it's just so good. I can't recommend this album enough.
Yeah, very bright toned, bright hued guitar tones.
It's funny that you say that. We're talking about doom metal, but you like bright tones. I'm some bands can do that.
Yeah,
Trouble
they can
do that.
They can mix that, and they have all of a sudden the tempo will slow down, yes. And the riff will be doomy.
It's not super slow. It's not like Funeral Doom or anything, right. But it's more like when Candlemass slows down. Yeah,
the song we played was one of the more up tempo things on the record, but the rest of the album is it's varied. So it goes through different moods and stuff. So highly recommended. Probably not be the last time we're going to talk about this record this year. So definitely
one of my highlights so far for Melodic Death Doom of this year.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing is, if it wasn't for the fact that the Swallow the Sun album is so freaking good.
Oh, I haven't noticed.
This would be we would be talking about Hellevorn as the early surprise of the year. I think
that we still are.
Oh yeah.
So, I mean, we still can talk about it. In the same sentence as Swallow the Sun, because we have Swallow the Sun coming up next.
Absolutely. I mean, and here's the thing about the Swallow the Sun record. I did not expect this band to go in this direction, and I'm thrilled that they did.
Where did you expect them to go?
I just kind of thought, after, you know.
So we're switching gears to Swallow the Sun now, right?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it.
Songs from the North was such a, a difficult album to digest in terms of just trying to get your head around it, because it was so much.
I agree.
And I love parts of that album. I don't love the entire thing. That first disc of Songs from the North is just about as perfect as you can get, I think, for a Swallow the Sun record. But, you have to consider the album as a whole. And I still have a hard time with disc 3 and parts of disc 2. So, I didn't really know where they could go after that. It was such a monumental opus, exploring different, all three major facets of that band's sound. It's where could they possibly go? And I did not see them heading in this sort of gothic metal direction that I did not see.
I mean, they've touched on this style before.
Yeah,
you can hear this album feels very personal, just like Halitar, and was the other album he did
Trees of Eternity. Yeah,
you can feel the heartbreak and the sadness in this album.
It's still a very dark, grieving album, but.
Grieving, that's a good word for it.
There's some bits. It's weird because I think he kind of maybe was aware of the fact that, and you know, no one can know what Juha is going through with all this in the past couple of years. But the one thing is his songwriting voice. It's like, okay, you do Trees of Eternity, which is this brutal, like, but beautiful, like, record, almost like the very, like musical personification of Elias Stanbridge.
Yes.
And then you have Halitar, which is just kind of like his like that's coming from that guy's gut.
That's his grieving process there.
It was a brutal, dark, heavy record.
That album got me through a couple of deaths in my life actually last year because it was just, it's that good of an album.
One of the things I said to you when we were a long time ago, we were doing that episode when we were talking about that record, was that it sounded like, that album sounded like someone grieving. Mm-hmm. Like, it sounded like a cathartic record.
Yeah.
And that's why I was having trouble with it, because I'm like, I don't really want to go into that world with that record.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like he got those two things out, and now he was kind of like looking at this new Swallow the Sun album as like, you know, he's still not around, he's still not out of it, but what do you want to, how do you want to say something differently? And I think that using gothic metal as the color palette that they did all throughout this album, this is the best songwriting they've ever done. This is the most cohesive album they've ever managed to create from front to back. There's not a weak fucking moment on this album.
It feels like a concept album without being a concept.
It feels like a thematic album.
Yeah.
Like there's some, like the musical thread is what's tying it together. Lyrically, you know, Swallow the Sun is pretty
bleak.
They're pretty bleak. That you can just say that as like a blanket statement, and you're probably pretty accurate. But the thing that can unify it is the music. I mean, this. I'm not exaggerating when I'm saying that this is the early front runner for album of the year right now. And it's like, it has that thing to clear of like,
well, there's no Amorphis this year, so.
You come out in January and you have all these things that, you know, stacking up against it. I know we just finished a freaking album of the year episode. It's too early to talk about this year, but when I heard this, I was just like, oh, am I going to hear anything this good for the rest of the year? Because if we hear something that's better than this will be a great year for
music. So why did you pick Here on the Black Earth?
It's my favorite song on the record. I think that the chorus is like the most effective chorus that he's ever written. And just the way they use vocals on this album, they're doing different things. They're trying different approaches. And the kind of swagger they throw around on this record when they can like just break out these clean vocal melodies and they're so gorgeous. You're just kind of like, holy shit, this band has reached a new like level, in my opinion, and I'm not as old a fan as you are of these guys, but I kind of fell into them hard. But this album, I'm interested to hear what you are going to say about it, because I think this is their best record.
This is not the song I would have picked. You know, I mentioned this before. When I first hear the album, there's always one track or two tracks that pop out for me right now.
Yeah.
And for this album, for me, it's Firelights.
Okay.
I really like that song a lot. But I definitely agree with everything you said. This is a combination of everything that I love about Swallow the Sun. It's don't get it wrong. It's still a bleak album. It's still a depressive, momentous album. I don't think I've listened to it as much as you might have so far. I'm really looking forward to picking this one up the show, maybe on vinyl or something like that.
Yeah.
I never got the single they put out, which surprised me. It's not even on the album.
Yeah, that was interesting, wasn't it?
I was like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting them to
actually have that, though.
Yeah, me too. It's not indicative of this album, I don't think, at all. But, which is a good thing. I think, what is it called? It was...
You know what that single reminded me of?
Lumina Aria?
Yeah, that reminded me of something that might have been on the Songs from the North sessions or something. Like maybe they had this, like, I don't know if this is true or not, but it seems like something they had left over from those sessions. And they're like, hey, let's do something fun with this. But it does not, it is not indicative of this record at all. I don't think it has anything to do with it, frankly. So
it's a beautiful, beautiful album. I love the cover.
Yeah.
With that weird Dear God on it.
Yeah.
And the logo, it's small and it blends into like the background of the album cover.
Yeah, it's like water or something,
like,
right?
It's like water with like a orange ripply through it.
Yeah.
Which is the same color as the logo. It's very well done.
That's mesmerizing. Awesome like t-shirt art right there.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing these guys with Wolfheart and then leaving for Children of Bodom.
I'm going to stay for Children of Bodom. I kind of like that last record they put out a couple years ago.
We saw them, I guess, when Tear opened up for them at the last time at the House of Blues, and we watched them for a little bit. How they used to be.
They have a record coming out in March, and I think it'll be interesting to hear how that sounds.
Yeah.
I think it's time for them to have like a comeback, like a renaissance. It's time for us to go all in on Children of Bodom.
Well, if Alexi, right?
Uh-huh.
If he puts away some of the guitar winkery in the show office, it'll be a better album.
Yeah.
That's what turned me off to them. It's like, dude, we know you can play your fucking guitar. We know that.
Yeah. Just get back to that Melodeth style, that kind of, you know.
I interviewed them on their very first album right before it came out.
Classic record. Yeah. Yep.
All right, speaking of another classic record, let's get into the brand new Swallow the Sun. The album is called When a Shadow is Forced into the Light, and we are going to hear on the Black Earth. Hear on the Black Earth. All right, check it out.
Of an empty heart. When you
Riftera, huh?
Aiming
for one of the worst band names ever.
Yeah, I mean, we, you know,
like Manimal.
Like Manimal, it's been.
Who Manimal are awesome.
It's been a Riftera problem.
Riftera are pretty good.
Riftera, that's a pretty terrible name.
I thought Pantera was already Riftera.
I'm sure Pantera will be filing a lawsuit soon. Yeah,
you know what they were though.
What's that?
Riftastic.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of these records. I don't know. I just kind of like fell upon it, stumbled upon a promo of it, and it was just like okay. Like I kind of like it just for the riff candy, you know. And I'm not normally into that kind of stuff, but it's that weird mix of like Chordon of Bodom style Melodeath with like Scar Symmetry vocals and
very thrashy.
Very thrashy. It's like this weird mix of stuff, and I'm just like, you know what? Their name is actually very apt. Like just Riftera, like it's what sometimes like the clean vocals throw you. You're kind of like, I thought I'm here for like the riffs, and now you're giving me this clean vocal chorus and stuff.
So I'm not a. We listened to two songs. We listened to the song we just played called, what is it? Burning Paradise.
Yeah.
So I like the guy's vocal styles when he does like some of the gruff death stuff, and then he does a little bit of Blackish.
Mm-hmm.
But his clean vocals. Sounds like he's needing a lot of help with production on that.
They're heavily processed.
Very.
Yeah.
It almost seems like trying to go for like an Aussie like cadence to his vocal, or that cadence isn't the right word, but an like an Ozzy Osbourne like pitch.
I just thought he was kind of going for more of just like a standard Queen vocal approach, yeah, like whatever
but it's not
his
good.
Voice can approximate. I think it's passable. I think it doesn't bother me. This is obviously like a band that I'm just going to be like, it's just like, if I'm in the mood for something like this, this will kind of fit the bill. I thought it was interesting just because like it's been a while since I've heard something that's so merging thrash and Melodeath in this way and just aggressively doing it, like just like in your face aggressively doing it. And that they come from Finland, I thought was weird. So
yeah.
I've been listening to this record like
hence the Children of Bodom style.
I would assume so. Yeah,
but there's less thrash out of bands from that area.
Yeah, there's been
a couple, but
and these guys, they're not like they don't have ties to any other bands in Finland. That they're pretty new. I think their first album came out like in a couple years ago, 3 years ago.
Yeah, 2015.
So this is their second record. And they're interesting. I mean, I don't think they're going to be a band that's going to be like a heavy touring band or anything, but you know, for what it is,
Encyclopedia Metallum calls them alternative melodic death thrash metal.
I think they got it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the alternative, I could see that being like that coming from that Queen vocal thing, that Scar Symmetry type stuff.
Well, yeah. And when I think alternative thrash or alternative that type of stuff, I think about that stuff we were talking about earlier, that it's not like typical thrash and they try different styles out, and
yeah.
I can definitely see these guys fitting in that genre.
Yeah. Surprised that no one counseled them on the name. Like whoever they signed to was like, reconsider the name. Like we want to sign you, but you know.
There could have been so many secondary.
Like maybe that was the best one they came up with.
Riff something. Riff, yeah. I don't know what it is.
It must have
but
riff
not terror.
In there. Yeah.
They're the riff of the earth. Riftera.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Riff blood. There you go. That's better than Riftera.
Riftastic is even better than that. All right. Well, that's Riftera in a nutshell.
Yeah.
So you watched the Heavy Trip movie?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
What'd you think of it?
I loved it. It was really charming. And, and genuinely had some funny moments to it. One of those movies where it's like you can see where the formula is going.
It's a stupid comedy.
It's a stupid comedy formula, and if it wasn't for the metal stuff in there, I think I would have been kind of detached from it. I've been like, all right, this is, you know.
Well, but you related to it a little bit.
Related to it a lot. Yeah. So
because we all live in Finland and trying to put our band together.
Well, it was just one of those movies where I'm like,
wait a minute, what was the name of the band in the movie? The Riftera?
Impaled Rectum.
Right. Wasn't Riftera though.
The I bet this is a movie that was like big in Finland.
Sure.
I bet it was like a big success over there. And it kind of like what I did appreciate about the movie was it did have some heartwarming stuff, like the part where he I did not see the drummer. Well, okay. Spoilers.
Uh-oh, spoiler.
Spoilers.
I haven't seen this.
If you haven't seen this, just fast forward for like 30 seconds. I anticipate that happening with the drummer. So the kind of stuff that he went through afterwards, I was like, ah, that was kind of nice, like kind of touching. He had some, it had some heart to it too, which is like one of the reasons I think why we all like Quirks and stuff like that. So it wasn't just all stupid. It had some emotion to it. And I thought the ending was really good. Cool that it was, I don't know, just the whole, it was fun. It was fun. Go rent it. I think you can rent it on like Amazon for like $2 or something.
Yeah, that's where I saw it. I rented it on Amazon Prime.
It was like
$1.99
or something. Yeah.
Eventually I'm probably going to pick up the DVD or Blu-ray or something like that to support the filmmaker.
Yeah. I mean, and this, you know, everyone's talking about this Lords of Chaos movie.
So what do you think about this Lords of Chaos movie?
Well, I think I'm going to, you know, honestly,
I'm definitely going to see it.
I'm going to go see it. You said it's going to be playing here like a draft house cinema?
I believe so. It comes out on the 8th of February of 2019. So if you're listening to this episode after that and you've seen it already, don't spoil it for us.
Well, I think
we haven't seen it.
I'm sure it'll be at one of these local draft house cinemas here in Houston.
Yeah, Alamo Draft House. It's probably going to be a VOD type of thing. But it's right now on Rotten Tomatoes, it's at 93%.
Really?
Which is surprising to me. Reviews, 12 reviews. So that's a pretty good aggregate score so far. That gives me hope.
Jonas Åkerlund he's talented, you know?
So, yeah, that's the director, right?
Yeah.
What has he done?
He's done like a crap ton of pop music videos.
Oh, really?
Like Madonna, and he did like Prodigy. Like he did like some Metallica stuff too, like Turn the Page. And
he was in Bathory at one point, wasn't he?
He was like on the first Bathory record. He was, I think, a drummer, I think, or something, guitarist. I don't remember. Yeah.
Weird from going to that to Madonna music videos, but
yeah. Okay. So I guess it, you know. You're in a band and you're a film student and you decide to lean hard on the film student business. So.
He did Paul McCartney, so.
Yeah, I mean, he's been successful. He did Satyricon, Fuel for Hatred, that music video, I think.
He did Candlemass. He's done Roxette. I guess Candlemass was his first metal thing and he jumped into Roxette.
Yeah.
Hollywood Undead, I'm sorry. Lady Gaga. Madonna, Rammstein, Pitbull. He looks like, I mean, he's making money off doing these pop music videos, but which is sort of cool that he is able to go back. Okay, I'm a metalhead at heart.
Right.
So hopefully this movie is sort of true to the story. I don't think the surviving band members are too happy with it, but nobody really is on that kind of shit.
Yeah, Varg was definitely had some things to say recently that we cannot repeat.
okay.
I mean, my view on this is I'm kind of conflicted in just really two basic ways. One is that the book was largely inaccurate. I mean, it got some things right. People say the book is entirely bullshit. That's not true. The book did get a lot of things right. But it distorted the entire, the overall arc of the and scope of what these guys were doing, and it really leaned into this satanic thing, and
well, yeah, that was their hook.
That was one of the biggest like inaccuracies that kind of distorted the entire story.
And the book is sort of written not as a fictional book; it's written more of as like what's the word I'm trying to think of.
Well, it's based on
like quote unquote documentary style
eyewitness accounts. Yeah. You know, almost like
a documentary in a book, really.
Yeah, it's almost like a true crime accounting of this. But my problem with the book is that it was inaccurate. So why would you want to do a movie based on it? And then if you're Jonas Åkerlund doing a movie based on this screenplay, are you trying to redress? Is the movie's attempt to that would be interesting to see? Is the movie trying to get it right and basically paint these guys not as this satanic, you know, underground cult thing.
What I can't get over is the trailers. I mean, the movie looks good. It looks
well, professional. Yeah.
Yeah. Roy Culkin as Euronymous. Yeah. He looks too much like a Culkin for me, even with the long hair and being all metal.
Yeah.
But apparently there's another Skarsgård that has not made a film career yet. Now he's in this movie. He's playing Faust.
Yeah.
And I know what you meant about what Varg said. I just remembered that comment.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're not repeating that.
The thing about this. Okay. So here's why I'm going to be interested in watching this movie. It seems like from the two trailers I've seen that he's basically going to try to shatter the book's central premise that this was a satanic underground thing, and he's going to go for these are just idiot kids in over their heads at some point, but they're trying to just because the trailers really kind of juxtapose this idea of this evil shit, this evil music, the imagery of it. And then these guys are just kind of being idiots, like dorks backstage, you know?
Right.
So I'm thinking that he's going to try to puncture that whole mythology behind it and basically go, you know, like it'll be kind of the opposite of Until the Light Takes Us. Where Until the Light Takes Us, it's big. As much as I love that document, that film, its big flaw was it sort of mythologized Varg Vikernes and all these other guys in the scene and dead and everything. And it's like, I think you need a counterpoint to it. So for that reason alone, I think it's cool that it's coming out. But here's the thing that bothers me about it. These guys have English or American accents. It's like you couldn't grab some Norwegian actors, you know, and try to do this like a subtitle thing, like try to film it in Norwegian and have it be a little more accurate. I think the fact that it's going to be in English is going to take away from some of the potency of what these guys are trying to do. Because regardless of how silly these guys were, they were fucking silly. The music was real. Their actual recorded output was real. So you should at least be like respectful of that fact and not have these guys be like doofuses who sound like they work at, you know, like, I don't know, the gas station or something out here.
So
you know?
It looks like the VOD release date is February. This says 2018. What the fuck?
That's
not right. I'm like, wait a minute. It's like 11 months ago. I'm like, no, that's not right.
I will definitely go and see this at Alamo, have a couple beers and see it. Sounds like a fun time.
It looks like it's playing one time, 10 p.m. on February 15th.
Okay. I'm there.
Yeah.
To go buy tickets, I guess.
Let's possibly do it.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. Yeah. So to finish paying tribute to Bruce Corbett, we wanted to play something old. And what's older than something from the first Rigor Mortis album?
Yeah.
When we talked about this a lot already, but it's from 1988. One of my favorite album covers from that era.
Yeah.
It's just a simple, amazing red background with this character, skull character on it. Perfect. It's brilliant, actually.
Yeah.
I should probably get a patch of that, because that's a great looking, that'd be a great looking patch. You know?
Yeah.
But we're going to get into Wizard of Gore from that album, Rigor Mortis, and then we're going to play something from the new Flotsam and Jetsam, speaking of modern thrash metal.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be back.
Scream as their blood starts to flow. Body falls fall to the floor. Choosing not.
Welcome back, MSRcast 216, and going to prepare for some chaos here with Flotsam and Jetsam.
That's right.
Album called The End of Chaos. Now, I haven't listened to this album. You played me a song earlier. It sounds like Flotsam and Jetsam.
it definitely sounds like Flotsam and Jetsam.
We saw them last year, right? Opening for Hammerfall. Was that
That's correct.
Year? Okay. I really like them live.
They were great live.
I thought they were really fun live.
The new album is called The End of Chaos. Just came out last week on AFM Records. The song that I picked is called Prepare for Chaos. It's about like an ancient being waking up and coming back to life and hungering and killing and stuff like that.
Is it their mascot on the cover who's just thrashing up an ocean or something like that?
I hope not, because that's sort of cheesy looking.
That's one of the worst album covers.
Flotsam and Jetsam's had some pretty bad album covers.
Yeah, it's rough.
But I've always really liked this band. There's a couple albums here and there where they sort of weren't up to par. But this one has some really good catchy stuff. Eric AK is a great vocalist. He fits the band really, really well.
I really like their 90s era. I think is underrated.
I agree.
What was that album, Cold? I forgot what year that was.
The Cold was 2010.
Okay, maybe I'm thinking of another one. There was something in the 90s that came out that I really liked from them.
92 was Quattro, which is a great album.
Okay, yeah. It might be
95 was Drift, then High, Unnatural Selection.
High.
Yeah.
I had High on CD. That was a great record.
That album cover right there.
Yeah, that one. Yeah.
Yeah. I still have that album. I have all the stuff from the 90s.
Yeah. They had a good run in the 90s of like doing
they did a fucking Lard cover on that album.
Unconventional stuff, yeah. They're a cool band.
Unnatural Selection. I think that's That was a good album, too.
Yeah.
They were one of the bands in the 90s that were in that era of stuff we were talking about. Let's go different.
Yeah.
But then again, Flotsam and Jetsam have always been a little bit different. They haven't been the typical thrash.
I think they only released that one typical thrash record, really. One or two in the 80s.
The first two or three
were
very, very much in that vein. Once they started hitting Quattro, like Swatting at Flies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's where they sort of changed a little bit.
We would, you
they
know,
combine their styles.
This episode's taking shape in our heads. We would have to make sure we did a lot of research for it.
No, for sure.
Like go back and listen to all this stuff and really, because there's like, I think there's theories to form about that. One of my theories is that a lot of this stuff changed after the Black Album because of the sound of that record. And a lot of the pressures that maybe these guys were under.
I can see that. A lot of bands were trying to replicate that success.
I mean, I think that, like, you look at Countdown to Extinction, that sound of that album is largely due to the Black Album. So it's interesting to see that kind of Bob Rock effect, that shockwave
but
that it sent through.
Speaking of that, let's not get too much into it now.
No. We'll save this. Yeah.
So, but Countdown to Extinction, I think more modern thrash band emulate that album, which was an emulation of what Dave Mustaine was trying to do on Metallica's success.
Right.
I think more bands base their style on what Megadeth is doing instead of Metallica.
I think it might have worked out that way, yeah. But in the initial wake, it might have been different, you know?
Sure.
So, yeah. Interesting. We're going to think about this a lot more.
Yeah. I want to talk about this next band a lot. I've always heard about this band, but I've never listened to them. I got sent the promo about 3 weeks ago, and I probably listened to the album about 25 times by now.
Jeez.
It's really, really good. The band I'm talking about is called Meadows End. They have a new album coming out called The Grand Antiquation. Comes out in March.
Was this the sauna band?
This was the sauna the video.
Okay.
The video is not great, but it's shot really, really well. Very beautifully shot, you know, with a lot of depth of field and that type of stuff. But this is their fourth album. The first album came out in 2010. The last one was Sojourn in 2016. This band, they're symphonic melodic death metal. You know, very much in the Finnish style, but they're actually from Sweden. They're on Black Lion Records. I never really heard of this record label before, but one of the promo guys that I work with, you know, sent me this album, and I had heard the song before, the song we just heard, Non-Dreaming Eye, and it's such a catchy fucking song.
Yeah.
The riffing in there, there's like this one riff that they go back to, and it's sort of like, I can't really describe how, it's sort of almost backwards in a way, but it's not. It's a really, really catchy album. Heavy keyboard. So imagine Stradivarius heavy keyboards in, you know, a melodic death metal band. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I can hear that. I mean, and maybe it was just that one song, but in that one song with the music video set in the sauna, which is as ridiculous as it sounds, it was I got that kind of metalcore vibe from it a little bit, just in the way the guitar riffs were kind of constructed and the tone of them and stuff, and maybe the approach, like, you know, like the way they were patterned with the vocals. It didn't detract from it though. I actually liked what I heard.
Yeah.
It just surprised me. I was just like, oh, okay, this is a band from Scandinavia, right? Mm-hmm. It's interesting. It's different. It's different from that region, you know? So it's like, just for that, I think they're catching my attention just to like give them a more.
Yeah, they have a deep, heavy groove to them.
Yeah,
Great musicianship throughout the entire band. I really dig the vocals. The death growls that he does are very clear and, you know, pronounced, which is what I love that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm a sucker for that. I really like Meadows End. I haven't gone back and listened to all of their previous albums, but I definitely will. But Contender for me already is one of my definitely albums of the month when it comes out. It's not even out yet, and I'm like already listened to it so much.
When's this one coming?
In March. Okay. March 8th.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's an early drop for that single, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they just released a new video today off the album. The first song on the album is called Devolution. And we watched the music video for that, too. Not music video, but what do you call them? The
lyric
video. Lyric video.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I definitely recommend this band a lot.
All right.
Please check them out. Please.
Do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
The, okay. We're playing it, right?
Yeah, you got confused. You're like, what are we doing next?
Yeah.
We're actually going to get into it.
Okay.
Stop dreaming, man. You need to be a non-dreaming eye.
My phone's distracting me.
Put your phone away, man.
welcome back to MSRcast 216. And that was our good friends from Italy, Ancient Bards.
Oh, you're on a first name basis now with them?
I feel like I am. I've been listening to this record so much. And it's weird, you know, this album is a sequel to their first album, which was the Black Crystal Sword Saga Part 1. This is their fourth album. They are a relatively new band in power metal. I think their first album was, 2010, I think?
Yes, that's correct.
They are an Italian power metal band, and that is interesting to me for the reason that I don't typically like Italian power metal. But in the past couple of years, I've found like certain things I've liked from that country. Like, you know, this last year, Fallen Angel, that record was really great from them.
Not a Rhapsody fan or anything like that?
I mean, I wouldn't ever say a bad thing about Rhapsody. It's just I no matter how hard I've tried, except for one or two albums, I've had a hard time getting into Rhapsody. And Italian power metal, that style just doesn't really mesh with me that well. But I do like Ancient Bards, and I do think their first two albums are really the best representation of the Italian power metal style.
I figured out why you like them.
Why is that?
Because it sounds like a Blind Guardian album. Their name sounds like a Blind Guardian album.
It's a good name. It's a good band name.
Do you disagree?
Sort of. I mean, I think that just the bards and the name, it doesn't conjure up that image to me. This album, it has the palette of Rhapsody. I just think they write better songs. I think that Rhapsody's problem was always they would let the lyrical concept get in the way of actual good songwriting, and they have Ancient Bards has a more competent songwriter. I think the guitarist's name is Claudio. He's the main writer. The real draw in this band to me is the singer, Sarah Squadrani. I love her voice. It's a crystalline voice, really pure, but still, you know, kind of capable of like a lot of emotional heft. And they just write really fun songs. It's just a fun record. And
she was in an Arion album, right?
Right. Yeah. She guessed a
Theory of Everything.
Everything. Yeah. And, this song, I think, is like the most representative, like the best song on the record, like this, the most representative of the record. My favorite song on the album personally is the ballad called Light. And it's we were listening to it earlier, and you said it sounds like a Disney song. I was like, yeah, it's a Disney princess ballad.
Totally was.
And I love the fact
that I can imagine some girl, you know, some Disney princess up in her castle singing this song.
They have a music video they released for it like recently, and it's a really pretty music video. It's like filmed on a beach with like the sunset in the background and stuff. It does have that kind of Disney princess feel to it, and I'm totally okay with that.
Any animals that came and sang with her?
No, it was just her on a beach, and then it was interspersed with some shots of like a ballet dancer dancing. Really simple concept, but like really tastefully done. And I don't know, I'm like, there's been this one of these bands where I've like listened to their albums and I've been like, man, these are good, because they seem to have like a great songwriter at their core. And I think this album might be my favorite of theirs so far. I mean, it's, if you want something that's really just over the top, shimmery power metal, but not so like plot heavy and ridiculous, like Rhapsody can be at times.
Yeah.
Rhapsody actually is better when they strip everything down.
Agreed.
Like that album they came out with like 2 years ago or something in 2017.
Talk about the one they redid older stuff or?
No.
You talk about Rhapsody or Rhapsody of Fire? Because it's still confusing.
It wasn't the album of redone stuff. It was the one that they had done. It was just like a regular Rhapsody album. It was Starpoli's version. Anyway, whatever. I don't know what version it was. I mean, who can keep track of this fucking band? Now they have a Rhapsody album coming out in like a month or two without Luca Turilli or Fabio Leone. And it's just like, all right, guys.
You're talking about the Rhapsody of Fire?
Yeah, it might have been. But It was the first album they had done that was not
part of the... Neither of those guys are on this album.
It was the first album they did that wasn't a part of the saga of like their mythology.
Sure.
And it was just like, man, you guys can write good songs when you want to focus. And so anyway, the point is that I think the Ancient Bards kind of just get to that point right away, you know. Just because you're from Italy doesn't, not everything has to be some grand. And I know it says saga. I know it says the Black Crystal Sword saga, but they have a really intelligent way of going about
the
saga.
It sounds like just an in-depth fantasy novel.
It does, but the album doesn't read that way.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is funny. You're talking about Rhapsody. So I looked on Encyclopedia Metallum. Rhapsody of Fire is where all the original Rhapsody albums live.
Right.
That's interesting to me because, and then the other band is Luca Turilli's Rhapsody.
Right.
So I would figure they'd be Rhapsody and Luca Turilli's Rhapsody and then Rhapsody of Fire, which is what they changed their name into. But yeah. I guess it makes sense.
The legal entity is Rhapsody of Fire.
Yeah.
And those old albums happen to be just Rhapsody.
Rhapsody, yeah. Correct.
Luca Turilli's Rhapsody, that Prometheus album wasn't that, it didn't sit well for me, that one. I think maybe it did. I don't even remember. See, that's the problem with Rhapsody. It's just,
they did two full lengths.
It's like I saw this news article in Blabbermouth earlier today about how Tracy.
You still read Blabbermouth?
I'll look at it every now just to keep up on stuff. And it was like Tracy Guns is pissed off at Steve Riley for doing a Tracy Guns less version of L.A. Guns, and it's like. Tracy Guns had his LA Guns and then the singer left and did his own version. And now, the drummer is doing his own version. It's like,
that's confusing the fans.
This it's madness. At some point it's just lunacy.
Yeah.
Who was showing up to go watch D. Riley's LA Guns? I want to know.
Wasn't Rat the same way? Wasn't there a couple different versions of Rat at one point?
Yeah, but it was always either Warren DeMartini.
Or Stephen Piercy.
It was always one of the two.
Right.
L.A. Guns is taking it to a whole new level with the three bands. Or, I don't know, I guess maybe Tracy Guns and the singer Phil Lewis are back together. Why are we talking about L.A. Guns?
I don't know. Maybe Guns N' Roses, you know. That's the other version of L.A. Guns.
Yeah.
That made it popular. That made it big.
Yeah. There's no telling what Luca and Fabio are going to do now. I'm sure there's another version of Rhapsody just around the corner that we're not aware of.
Oh, I bet. So we're getting close to the end of this episode. What albums are you looking forward to this year? Now, we've sort of touched upon it before.
Yeah.
But let's take a quick hot minute and discuss.
It's not something that I've thought of a lot this year because I just kind of want to look at what's immediately in front of me. But obviously what's immediately in front of me is the Avantasia record. Now, here's the thing.
Who I get to see soon?
Yeah. I mean, and here's the thing with this record.
Oh, by the way, do you want like a t-shirt or something?
Yeah, that would be cool.
You wish you were here t-shirt.
The stuff they've released from Moonglow so far is interesting. I think the Candace Night song, the actual, is really good.
It's good, but it's not a single. They shouldn't have released that as a single to promote it.
I think that the way these things work these days, it's not even like they're putting money into it. It's just like, oh, we'll just do a batch of these videos that have like different guests on them and stuff. And it's weird. I'm really interested to hear what he does with Jeff Tate because I'm not sure if he and Tate are just going to be working on some kind of awesome level where everything they do together will be as good as the song on Ghost Lights. The problem that this album will have is that Ghost Lights was so good, was such a great record.
So let's go over some of the albums coming out in February and March. We'll just quickly touch about it. So I've been hearing a lot about the new Astronoid.
Yeah.
Sowin Lotus comes out this next week. Actually comes out tomorrow. As of recording this, great album. Beast in Black have a new album coming out, which
that'll be a big one.
I've heard a couple songs off of it. It's very, very hair metal-y now. Like, yeah, it's different.
It's like Battle Beast influencing Beast in Black a little bit.
God, yeah. Definitely, yes. Avantasia, of course, Moonglow comes out. There's a new Rotting Christ album. New Candlemass album, The Door to Doom, which I pre-ordered this from place in Jersey, like Newbury Comics or something like that, and it comes like with an autograph. The CD is going to come autographed by the band.
That's cool.
I was like, oh, got to do that.
Yeah.
Dream Theater has a new album coming out. Delane, Overkill, The Wings of War, which is like what, album number 50 for them? But I've heard some stuff from it. It's really good.
Yeah.
There's your Rhapsody of Fire that you're talking about. There's your, I know you cannot wait for the new In Flames.
Yeah.
Queensryche has a new album coming out in March, Children of Bodom. Iron Fire and Iron Savior both have albums on the same day.
That'll be fun. I mean, Iron Fire less so, but Iron Savior definitely always fun to jam them.
Yeah, the new.
Really interested in that Queensryche record to see where
they
go.
I've heard one song. Apparently, Todd LaTorre plays all the drums on it too.
Yeah, it's interesting what's going on with that band right now with Scott Rockenfield. Is he in or out? Or it's the first Queensryche record without Scott Rockenfield. It's going to be strange.
It'd be okay though.
You know, that guy, he's an underrated drummer. I mean, yeah. People who know him know that he's properly rated as being a badass, but like he is unappreciated at large, I think. I mean, he brings a lot to the table. So,
yeah. We also have New Tesla, the new Tier album finally coming out, which I've heard one song from that album and it's definitely Tier. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that one. Then we have Battle Beast, Bloodbound, Cellar Darling.
So Bloodbound and Battle Beast on the same day, I think.
Yes, correct.
Cellar Darling will be interesting.
And definitely looking forward, March 29th, Empath from Devin Townsend comes out.
Yeah. I mean, it's a freaking stacked first 4 months of this year. Like, there's a lot of stuff.
Allegion has a new album coming out in April, which they released a song today.
Yeah.
It's fucking good. I'll tell you that much. Hammerfall have a new album coming out this year.
Yeah.
Anthrax is supposed to be working on something new. New Amon Amarth, New Armored Saint, Blind Guardian supposedly have a new album this year.
Supposedly it's going to be the Orchestral Project.
Okay.
Yeah.
Death Angel have a new album coming out this year. Demons and Wizards, hopefully something.
Yeah.
Let's see. Finally, the new Exhorter. Flesh God Apocalypse, Fear Factory, possibly a new Gwar, the live Halloween album finally coming out.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to that one. Here's your LA Guns. They have a new album. Which version is it? We should play make no a game cares. Out of it. Nobody cares. That's the version, right?
Yeah.
There's so much coming out this year. It's going to be a good year. November's Doom are working on something new. I know you've been looking forward to Mr. Big.
I'll listen to it. I'll definitely listen to it.
All right.
Yeah. Underrated band.
Opeth, Prong, Rat. Sabaton have a new album? Scorpions?
There should be a new Sabaton record.
Septic Flesh, Sonata Arctica. Testament have a new album coming out. I'm looking forward to that.
Scorpions, they're making a noise about how they're working with a big producer.
Really?
On this record. I think I haven't said who it is. I can't imagine who it would be, but maybe, I don't know. I mean, who could be big in there for them?
There's some high-end shit coming out this year. It's going to be a difficult year to pick our albums.
A lot of that stuff towards the end there is in the realm of speculation. There's no dates or anything for that stuff. It's all just like, maybe. Yeah, I'm not looking any further ahead than April, just to keep things manageable for the podcast and the blog and everything. So
yes,
yeah.
Let's talk about the next two songs then.
Okay,
you want to do that?
Yes.
So we're going to end the episode with these two songs. One, the first band we're going to play, it's something that's been on my radar for a long time, but I am addicted to this fucking album. The new album is called Black Frost, just recently released. These guys are actually a German band, but they definitely have like a Finnish mellow death, melodic doom death style to them.
I would have pegged them as like Finland.
Yeah, yeah. I know, right? Even my wife listened to it in the car last week. She's like, I'm like, yeah, can you believe these guys are German? She's like, they're not Finnish? I'm like, nope.
Yeah, that's weird.
It's very, very interesting to me. Black Frost is the name of the new album, and they just came out January 11th on Nuclear Blast Records. And they're touring with, I believe, Amorphis in Europe. So Maybe they'll make it down here to America sometime soon. But these guys are a cross between Mellow Death. They have a little bit of black, you know, black metal, Enslaved in there. There's a little bit of everything. I really, really like this album a lot. Very well produced. It's just, I say this a lot in this episode, but I recommend this album highly.
Yeah, this is one I'm gonna actually go and deep dive into, because everything I heard was really good, and it was like a mix of different things.
Oh, yeah.
It was unpredictable, and that's in my wheelhouse. Of, yeah, if you can keep me guessing, I'm interested. So
yeah, very, like you mentioned first off, Enslaved, just like the guitar riffing and
yeah,
the different stylistic changes and stuff like that, and going from clean to like the blackened styled vocals. Nailed to Obscurity have this down to a science by now. This is their, I believe, fourth album. Yeah, this is their fourth album. They've been around since 2007.
Wow.
So yeah, they've every 2 to 5 years a new album.
Yeah,
not bad. The other band we're going to be playing, it's not really metal at all. They're called Brave the Waters, and it's Rick Habib. He's a good friend of ours. Gray Sky's Fallen comes out very, very soon. You'll be able to find it on Bandcamp. We'll put a link on our show notes page, which is at metalgeeks.net or msrcast.com. So just go to this episode. We'll put a link to his Bandcamp there, so you'll be able to pick out this album. I've only heard this song so far. I plan to purchase it from him. Very, very chilled out, you know, guitar music. Very cool. It's a good ending to this heavy episode.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
But before we get to that, let's do a little house cleaning. Of course, we already mentioned our website, metalgeeks.net or msrcast.com. You can find us on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Spotify, any place you can find basically a podcast, any podcatcher.
Spotify's making things so much easier.
Oh,
like,
I agree.
You can actually, you know, embed our podcast in just in like Discord, into websites. Like all the linking options they have there. I mean, not to plug Spotify or anything, but it's actually like the easiest way to listen to the podcast right now. Like, forget iTunes. I mean, you can listen to us on iTunes if you want to, but
download
Spotify
on your phone,
so
bring
easy.
It with you everywhere you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally, man. Spotify, even for musical portion, I've been a proponent for years because,
I love their album embed where it just like puts a little box there and you can pull down the entire track listing and pick. Yeah, it's so cool.
Currently, we've talked to Des about buying CDs and vinyl and stuff like that. I will buy certain CDs, but I've been looking more at vinyl recently.
Yeah.
Especially for collector's purpose, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Some of my favorite bands. So,
well, I saw that, you know, the Moonglow, the Avantasia record, he was talking about how there's a limited run of these books,
yes,
like digibooks, and then after that, it's the standard jewel case.
Fuck the jewel case.
And I kind of like posted like on their Instagram thing. I'm like, why the jewel case? Like, why? Who's interested in the jewel case?
Apparently, so the new Swallow the Sun, it's digipack. So
good. Yeah. Fuck these jewel cases. Yeah. Forget them.
Agreed. Agreed.
Yeah.
All right, so of course you can find us on social media at MSRcast on all those. We have something maybe interesting. We're working on something between the Metal Geeks and the MSRcast social media soon. We'll talk about that offline. But where can people find your great work?
At themetalpigeon.com, and you can find me at the Metal Pigeon, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I'm going to try to be more active on Instagram this year. That's one of my intentions.
Your resolution?
Yeah. I mean, I'm all over Twitter. You can reach me on Twitter, but on Instagram, I want to try to be a little more active on there. So,
very cool, man. I need to as well. It's just very difficult.
Facebook, I'm barely hanging on to Facebook.
Yeah.
I know some people like comment at my stuff on Facebook, but I'm really out on Facebook right now.
So what you're saying is tweet at you?
Yeah, tweet at me. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for tuning in to episode number 216 of MSRcast. I have been one of your hosts. I have been Carrie the Metal Geek, along with
Sean the Metal Pigeon.
And one last thing we have to say:
keep it metal.
Exactly right.
splintered bark. All of them hurt like they were infected just now. As they lurch in the ancient limbs, murder streets withers away. Earth erases cycle of nature.
droids. Thanks for listening to another fine podcast brought to you by MSR Productions. All rights reserved, blah, 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 blah. For reviews, archives of our podcasts, and all your other metal geekery needs, please visit metalgeeks.net. Keep it geeky. Keep it metal.